Hello, airport industry folks. Welcome to the AX Insider podcast, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Andy Telejohn, the senior writer at Airport Experience News. This podcast will be one part of our 20 Years, 20 Voices series, celebrating the upcoming 20th Airport Experience Conference. During these calls, we're talking with industry veterans who've overseen the evolution of the concessions industry over the last two decades and change. And today we're talking with Andy Wedig, who's seen this from a number of different angles. Today, he's the executive director of the Airport Restaurant and Retail Association. Thank you for taking some time, Andy. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Andy. I'm encouraged and honored to be one of your 20 esteemed veterans.
Appreciate you taking the time. You got into airports for the first time in 1998 with Unison Consulting. Up until that point, if I recall correctly, you'd done commercial real estate. How did you land at Unison, and how did you land in airports?
Well, it's an interesting story because it also sort of points to what is the evolution of the airport concessions industry. I was in commercial real estate, as you said, for about 15 years, got into it out of graduate school, worked in investment planning and investment analysis for commercial properties, primarily office buildings and, most importantly, shopping centers. And it was still the era of malls. Remember those? They were still a thing in the early 80s when I started in commercial real estate. But of course, it is and was, still is, an extremely volatile industry. There's a great deal of what have you done for me lately. There was also a trend toward a more of a short-term look at the industry as it became more and more of an asset class influenced by Wall Street. So I unfortunately found myself at the short end a couple times during downturns. And during one of those downturns is where I landed at Unison, where the retail practice, which included management of O'Hare and Midway at the time, was very similar to my real estate experience, helping manage commercial properties, in this case, shopping centers, airports, airport concessions programs, as well as planning them from sort of the perspective of investment analysis. So it was a good fit. Airport programs at that time were starting to feel more like shopping centers. I heard more than one complaint about them being shopping centers. It was not an uncommon comment to call airports shopping centers with airplanes attached to them. So I had experience planning and managing shopping centers. It was relevant experience, and Unison, Tony Drake and Judy Bird took a chance, as it were, on this commercial real estate guy.
Okay. And you say even around 1998, the airport concessions were starting to feel like malls. It certainly they look nothing like your programs of today. But what do you recall about those days? And what was it about being an airport? I mean, you stuck with it. What was it about airports that sort of grabbed you and kept you in the industry?
I think it was this the whole concept, not so much of it looking and feeling like shopping centers, but because the decision making, the stuff that was going on at that time was all very much in the same mode, the same general concepts as shopping centers. So how did you plan a merchandising mix? Where did you put it relative to the people? Obviously, you didn't have some of the stuff of shopping centers. You didn't have anchor tenants. In this case, the anchor was the airlines, was the flight that people were getting on. So through this whole period, I also got involved in several very, very exciting and important projects of helping airports plan those programs, build those programs, implement those programs, and in a number of cases, manage those programs. So I got involved in both terminal expansions, new terminals. Some were built, some were built much later, complete redos of programs. Many of the programs that are prominent in the industry today, I worked on at one time or another. And I think as you call it, the evolution of airports had started at that time. We started to create more customer-friendly programs, more variety, more branding, which is part of the variety, but also part of the quality. Something that had started to come in, driven by some developers, was obviously more reasonable pricing, so-called street pricing. And so there was a lot of things happening that were exciting, that weren't influenced as much by a, shall I say, a Wall Street mentality of what's happening this quarter. It was more longer term planning so that you could get to a point of improving the overall travel experience, making airports more customer friendly. And so these programs that we were working on, myself, along with my colleagues at Unison, I mentioned primarily Judy Bird, and then also some of our, you know, friendly competitors in the industry who have since retired, are really, we were all at the forefront of changing this business. Some are still around who were involved back then. And so it's still an evolving industry, but there are obviously are new challenges that we'll get to.
Sure. Yep. I was gonna say. I mean, and you've sort of touched on this, but you know, 1998, about 25 years ago, 5 years before this conference itself started, you know, what did the average? I mean, take me back to O'Hare and to Midway, and what are some of the things that you know existed, you know, in those programs at that time, you know, I mean, you talk about brands, and there's a lot of talk about where specialty retail is going right now, and that's an ongoing evolution as well, things like that. But you know, how did that look then, and you know, what are a couple of specific points along the way where maybe it started to evolve even faster and started to look like what we see in a program today?
Well, you had the beginnings of the transition, of the evolution, shall we say. You had the beginnings of it in some airports, such as Pittsburgh, primary example. You had the beginnings of it in some other programs that won awards at your first conferences, such as LaGuardia. Imagine that now.
Yeah.
And so individual airports, many of them with developers or management companies, were starting to make the changes of bringing in more variety, bringing in brands, things that weren't really in. So we had a generic program. We had snack bars. We had widespread, you know, snack bars. We had widespread bar. We had newsstands that were still, you know, selling tobacco products and newspapers. So there was a lot, and it was generic, and there was nothing in the way of price controls and the quality. Not to say anything about my friends who are in many cases members of my association now, but back then the quality wasn't as good as it turned out or could have been. Mm-hmm. Because there was no sense, there was little sense. It was evolving, it was changing, but there wasn't much sense of this as being a key part, a key amenity of the travel experience. Many cases it was a revenue opportunity. But when the transition started, it started to become a sense of this is part of the travel experience. This is how we enhance the travel journey. We can make money. We can still make money at it. So maybe it's a smaller part of the pie, but the pie is much bigger because it is more attractive to the customers. And so when they start to see things on there that they also see on the street, you've got an immediate sense of quality there, or a reference point, you know what it is, but you also know what the prices are. And so that's where you have to then start to change the mindset of the customer that this is going to be the same, hence the street pricing, hence the advertising of street pricing. you kept the revenue base by increasing the size of the pie.
Sure.
It's also the beginning of specialty retail. There wasn't much specialty retail when I started in 1998. That started as a trend to bring in specialty retail. I remember some early consulting engagements. That was the money. That was the incremental dollars, was the money you would get from the specialty retail element in your program as people start shopping. And that was demonstrated in some other airports, demonstrated Pittsburgh in the US, but it was also demonstrated in Europe and elsewhere.
Okay. Yeah. And you mentioned your association. This is Andy Wettig, Executive Director of the Airport Restaurant and Retail Association. And you mentioned Pittsburgh, you mentioned LaGuardia. You know, were there a couple of other, were there any other airports, or were there any particular leaders in the concessions industry, that sort of started spinning this forward, bringing in those brands, breaking some of the rules, sort of, quote unquote, from back before all this evolution started to happen? And when did the dam break and it really became a thing?
There's no particular date that say the dam broke. It was an evolution over the mid 90s through essentially the great financial crisis, the great recession of 2008-2009. Pickups along the way, of course. The 9/11 is an event that created a real slump. Mm-hmm. That called to question some of the assumptions, but we recovered from it. The players in it and the ability of what it did started to create more of a tidal wave, I'd say, than a dam breaking. It was more like, as the tide came in, it came in more rapidly, and airports started taking the opportunities to upgrade their programs when they had those things, such as either a new terminal or a remodeling program or just lease expirations. Okay. That led to things. And some of the stuff that happened was introduction of or more widespread acceptance of developers and managers, so third parties in the program. Unison was a player in that for a long moment there. Of course, our friends at Westfield, our friends at Marketplace, friends at Air Mall, that at that time, or BAA at that time, then Air Mall, now Fraport.
Yep.
They were bringing in these concepts. They were planning the programs. And what some of the things that came with that was more direct leasing, less prime concessionaires, so that you can get more participation in the industry. You could get more local presence in the industry. You could get more competition in the industry. And so all these things together started to upgrade the overall experience.
Okay.
And it was a trend. It wasn't an event. It was a trend over 15 to 20 years.
Got it. Yeah. No. And continuing on to today, I mean, it's not like the evolution has stopped by any stretch. After a number of years with Unison, you in 2016 moved on to HBF, which not too long after that was acquired by Paradies. So you got onto the into the operator side for a while. And I'm just, what kind of an experience was that? What did you get to see on that side of things that was new and exciting?
Well, I left Unison because it was an attractive opportunity appeared. I still consider the people who brought the opportunity to me to be friends. So all is still good. But what I started to notice on switching sides, as it were, looking at it from the other side, because for 15 years, more than 15, 18 years at that time, I had basically been on the airport side. So I wasn't working for an airport directly, but I was, consulting for airports. So the airport hat was on. I was managing programs leading the management effort of programs ranging in size, you know, from San Antonio at one time to a couple terminals at Newark, a couple terminals at JFK to a terminal at JFK and another terminal at LaGuardia, as well as O'Hare and Midway. So we're looking at, you know, a wide range of programs, a wide range of passengers, a wide range of opportunities to run this business from the airport side. What I learned and what struck me the most about joining HBF and then being acquired by Paradies was a newfound awareness of how many details of the business there are. It is a much more complex business than airports and consultants appreciate. And so even at Unison, we prided ourselves on viewing a transaction and viewing a program from all sides, from the airport side, the concessionaire side, the customer side, so that we could seek, as I put it in many a marketing material, win-win-win solution, so that would benefit ultimately the passengers. And it had to be a win for the airport. It had to be a win for the concessionaire, because if one of those two legs of the stool fell off, then the whole program would fall apart and you wouldn't be at a point where you were, you know, achieving satisfaction goals. You weren't accomplishing what the program could accomplish. And so what I learned at HBF and Paradies that was most striking is that consultants and airports only scratch the surface of the complexity of the business. There's so many things involved that weren't truly part of the planning process, such as how do goods move around? How big does a store need to be? How much space does it need, back of house, front of house? We could do all those things. We could also look at how, as consultants and planning, we could also look at what the merchandise mix should be, but we could also build programs that at that time, you know, a few concessionaires would be out there saying your program's too big, and we'd say no and build the program anyway. But then as I move over to the concessionaire side, I start to see what are the challenges in some of the programs. How do you merchandise a place? How should you deal with passenger flows? Things that we didn't necessarily understand completely or evaluate completely as we were looking at it from a consulting perspective. And when I say passenger flows, it's not only where are they walking around inside the terminal, but it's when are they walking around inside the terminal? And how does that affect the costs? How does that affect the structure of the stores? How does that affect your cost of goods? How does that affect your labor? How do you merchandise that, and how do you stock that? And so those are details, but as the saying goes, the devil is in the details. Yeah, and that's what drives the success of the program.
Sure, and when you're dealing with tight margins and costs being what they are, which I'm sure we'll get more and more into, I mean, that's every dollar makes a difference.
Every dollar makes a difference, as you said, when you're in a margin, when you're at a, and the sensitivity of those dollars, something else you don't quite understand when you're on the airport side, because you tend to look at totals. And so if you take off 3% of your sales because employments have dropped, that's primarily drops straight through to the bottom line. And when you're working on 10-15% margins, 3 points doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a big haircut.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And all of these pieces play together. Term lengths aren't as long as they used to be. When you were starting out, a lot of those contracts that were expiring that you were talking about were 25, 30 year prime operator deals. And I don't know, at least as I understand it now, you're talking more 5-7 maybe a 10-year contract. I mean, you know more about the specifics than I do, obviously, but Is that is that newfound knowledge and sort of revised perspective? Is that what led you to take the director position with ARRO when that came up around the same time that COVID hit?
The ARRO position to me is there's a personal element, and it's also kind of like a culminating role, because seeing the industry from basically both sides, I could, as long as I had, it was one of those where I was able to bring these pieces together, bring the perspective of the airport, bring the perspective of the concessionaire community together, my members, so that we can start to deal with some of the issues that have come up. And you know, we could talk about that because things were good, and as I jokingly refer to, and just even in our little pre-call when I started mentioning things like, you know, you could, before the financial crisis, you could borrow money and buy a house, borrow almost the entire purchase price if not in some markets. And that worked great as long as housing prices were going up 10-15% a year. But as soon as that stopped, the whole house of cards, as it were, fell apart. Same thing kind of happened in our industry. Costs were not as, they were still an issue, but they weren't as out of line as they are today. And what you ended up seeing is a lot of decisions could be made, but they get into a situation where they get into a place where you have to rely on growth. Mm-hmm. So if you made a bad cost decision, I won't say bad decision. There are no such things as bad decisions. There are bad outcomes, but there's no bad decisions. That's an economic joke.
Yep, I caught that.
Yeah, the idea is that as long as there's growth, we can cover up some of these unfortunate decisions or unfortunate outcomes.
Andy, you with all of the things you were talking about that you learned as you went over to the operator side and now in your role with ARRO, ARRO started up right as COVID hit. And
great timing.
It was. Yeah, that was a tough one. COVID was brutal, but one of the things that came out of that was, from the sounds of it, airports and operators really, maybe not for the first time, but at a degree that hadn't happened before, were working together to to make those numbers work and to find ways to get through, so that everybody survived and could come out in the end. How has that carried forward? How would you say that the cooperation is right now between airports and operators? Now that we're a couple of years removed from the worst of COVID, has that cooperation kept up? I know there's a lot of challenges and issues out there, but where is that all at right now?
That's a great question. And I do think, on behalf of the members of ARRO, we are really appreciative of the partnership that we had with nearly all airports. Most airports recognize the challenges faced by the concessions community. When there's no revenue, it's really hard to pay rent. It's really hard to pay mortgages. And so it was a recognition of these are serious times and we need these businesses to continue because they are part of our travel experience. Mm-hmm. We need these businesses to be here when things get better. And so there was that recognition, and we are truly appreciative of that. We want to jump off of that because one of the shortcomings of our industry has been for many years, we've rarely dealt with cost. So as sort of alluded to a little bit earlier, for much of the past two decades, we've essentially kicked the can down the road. So, we'll figure it out when we get there kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But now what's happening is coming out of COVID is that a lot of trends are converging. Some of these trends, some of these cost trends were here in the, you know, in the before days, before COVID. Some came about or were aggravated during COVID. So we've got supply chains, shortages, just inflation in general. Construction costs, there's a have gone really high, and there's a recognition that there's big distinctions between the, you know, the premiums in an airport versus on the street. And then probably the biggest one, is one that's certainly the most impact right now, but it's not just in our industry, is an economy-wide reckoning with labor.
Yeah.
How does labor, and you're seeing it, I saw just this morning, the United Auto Workers have already made a quote concession, unquote, of instead of demanding a 40% raise, they settled on a 30% raise. That's still, you know, UPS, huge numbers, Delta, American, United, Southwest, all of them giving raises, huge raises to not just lower cost labor, but to highly skilled labor. And so working this through is something that is a challenge to, certainly a challenge to the concessions industry, the aviation industry. And we, frankly, in our industry and concessions, we don't have a good mechanism to deal with costs. And so this is where the attention needs to be if we're going to maintain the industry, continue to attract capital to the industry. And, you know, Arif puts it as I put it as we need to evolve a new business framework. And that is where the spirit of cooperation between airports and concessionaires, stakeholders in this industry, we need to take that forward when there is this time that, so that we can develop this resilient, sustainable, equitable business model so that we can continue to prosper and, most importantly, provide the great customer experience that we've all come to appreciate and expect. And so it's a time of collaboration. We did it for 3 years. We had a partnership for the past 3 years. Now's the time not to say everything's back and let's get back to the old relationship, but to continue that spirit of partnership and collaboration so that we can, again, arrive at a place that keeps the focus on the passenger, keeps it on, but also does it in a way that is a win-win, again, to create that third win for the passengers.
Along those lines, Andy Wettig, Executive Director of ARA, along those lines, you know, what do you think is missing for the passenger right now? Let's drill down a little bit, and how do you see the industry evolving over the next 5 or 10 years, and what are some of the things that are coming down the line that will help improve customer experience?
It comes down to the labor side in many ways. Obviously, there's other parts of this. There's, you know, in labor infiltrates lots of things, but it's like, how do you, to maintain that customer experience, to maintain a service level, to keep brands and stores and restaurants fresh, to bring in new brands as, you know, this rapidly evolving economy and retail environment changes at a much faster pace than it has been, and capital costs are going the other direction, kind of indicating we need a longer one. We have to come to a point where we can keep these fresh. So does that involve technology? Does that involve supplementing labor so that they can be more focused on the consumer side of it to maintain that experience? How do you integrate these costs? How do you integrate it? And how do you use space more efficiently so that we can start to get costs out of the system that don't really add an appropriate amount of value to the customer experience? That's where we have to go. How we get there, there's a lot of possibilities. There's a lot of things that are happening in the street, you know, the traditional environment around technology, around robotics, around make lines and things like that. You know, self-checkout, all these things are coming into play, but it all comes down to is how do you deliver it all to, I won't call it a captive audience, but how do you keep it, keep an audience that is not there? They're not at the airport to shop and dine, but how do you keep them engaged in it so that they can take advantage of it and improve their travel journey? There's a lot to it. There's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of people working on it right now, and how do you bring it in? But it again becomes a partnership, because there's a lot of capital costs and a lot of costs, and how do you recover those costs so that we can continue to draw the best and the brightest into this business, but also bring capital into this business so that everyone can keep going forward, serving the customer.
So there's even before you get to figuring out what the next thing is, you got to figure out some of the nuts and bolts about how to get there first.
How to get there, how to pay for it.
Yep. Andy Wettig, Executive Director of the Airport Restaurant and Retail Association. Is there anything that we haven't hit on that you'd like to make sure to mention?
Oh, I have to mention, congratulations to
thank you,
AXN, I guess, for 20 years of the conference.
That's pretty wild, isn't it?
It is very wild. I was at the first one.
Were you?
I was at the first one, and I'm sure I have not been at all 20, but I can't think of one I missed. So
I've been to all but two. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I was actually young when I got into the industry. And that's clearly no longer the case.
Yes. And so I have to say congratulations on that to the whole team. And also, you know, appreciation too, because I've been part of that conference a number of times. So,
yeah, well, we thank you for your taking part as well. Andy Wettig, Executive Director of ARA, thank you for taking some time, and it's good catching up with you.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
All right. Have a good one. Thanks.